Welcome to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later, where we research the response of our past and review their relevance for today. This is your host, Moshe Kurtz. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today, we are joined by Mr. Gedalia Wielges, and we are going to be doing our first tshuva of the Beis Yosef. Now, I am always excited for every episode. I don't know if it's the coffee, but I think it's actually the content. This is like a wacky scenario about Yibum and Chalitza. Really crazy things are going to be flying. I'm not going to give it away. Mr. Rabbi, what do we go with over here?
We'll go with Mr.
You know, here's the thing. We're both, you know, I'm from the Yeshiva Shevelt also. Like, you know, you're affiliated in some capacity with Darche or something. So everyone, whether you're a Balabas or a Rebbe, the people in the administrative office get called Rabbi as well. But okay, fine. We'll go with Mr. Mr. Gedalia Wielges is a graduate of many well-established yeshivos, including Yeshivas Toras Moshe, Tomo, and the Mir Yeshiva, and holds a JD from the Fordham School of Law. He is an M&A lawyer practicing in New York City. Gedalia lives with his family and four children in North Woodmere, New York, where he gives a weekly shiur entitled Shoot Al Hadaf, which discusses tshuvos that relate to the past week's Daf Yomi. And so this is just a really great example, again, of, you know, many times on a podcast, we have Rabbanim, we have academics, but I think, Gedalia, you're just a really great example of, you know, you don't need to be in the rabbinic profession, you don't need to be in academia to be able to really love Shaul Tshuvos and love Talmud Torah and even give a shiur on these kind of topics to your community. So I've had the pleasure of seeing your work via Twitter and then looking up your recordings, which are online. And I thank you for coming today to share some of your immense content with our listeners. Without any further ado, maybe you want to just tell us a little bit about the Beis Yosef. I would suspect that many of our listeners are somewhat familiar with the Beis Yosef already, maybe by way of a commentary on the Torah and Shulchan Aruch, but any information that you'd like to give us, and then the context of this really wacky tshuva we're about to look at.
Okay, sure. First of all, thank you so much, Rabbi Kurtz, for this opportunity. It's a real schuss to be part of this this wonderful podcast. As the listener may have guessed, the tshuva of Beis Yosef was written by Rav Yosef Cairo, the same author as the Sefer Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef was born in Spain. He passed away at the age of 87 in the year 1575. This particular Sefer, the tshuva of Beis Yosef, was actually published after he passed away. It's a collection of tshuvos from the Beis Yosef focused exclusively on Evan Ezer issues of man and woman. This Sefer was published by Rav Yosef Cairo's son Yehuda. Now, despite the immense popularity of the Beis Yosef, and everyone has heard of the Beis Yosef, we don't really know that much, or at least I don't really know that much, about his children. But I do want to share something fascinating with you about Yehuda, who published this Sefer. I don't think most people are aware of this. I certainly wasn't aware of it until a few weeks ago when my Rav, Rishwal Weinberg, pointed this out to me. If you look at the end of the Sefer Shulchan Aruch, the last Sif in Choshen Mishpat, the Shulchan Aruch concludes with like a tefillah. And he says, I'm writing this on Tes Zayin Adar Rishon, in the year Sicha, which is Shin Yud Ches Hei. So if you do the math, comes out to about February of 1563. So that's 12 years before the Shulchan Aruch passed away, puts him at the age of about 75. And he writes, Bakasha, Tfila, V'yizakeni l'hoilid banim zacharim. He gives himself, I want sons. We know that Beis Yosef had some children. I don't know how many survived. He definitely had some before this. I don't know if he had sons. I don't know if they survived. But he puts in a bakasha. He wants sons. He wants to be Osek Petorah, to be Mora Hara'ah, to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Okay. Now, if you look at the introduction to the Tshuvos Beis Yosef, as mentioned, published by his son Yehuda. So he writes in the Hakdama, in the introduction, he says, I was a young child when my father passed away. And then later in the Tshuva, he mentions that at the time of publication, I'm only 27 years old. And then a little bit later in the Hakdama, he writes that my father passed away 24 years ago. Now, if you're doing the math, you don't have to be a math major to get this. If you did 27 minus 24 gives you 3, which means that when the Shulchan Aruch passed away, his son Yehuda was 3 years old. Now, as we said, the Shulchan Aruch passed away at the age of 87, which means that the Shulchan Aruch gave birth to his son Yehuda at the age of 84, 9 years after he had asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu for this gift of a son.
Whoa.
So that I would think is fascinating in and of itself, just on its own, but add to the fact that, you know, a few weeks ago it was the talk of town of a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael who had his Bechor at the age of 84. So I'm here to tell you, Ein Kol Chadash Tachas HaShemesh. There's nothing new under the sun. It's not the first time a well-known Rav had a child at the age of 84. Okay. So with that behind us, let's just give a little introduction to the tshuva. Let's give a little introduction to the halachas of Yimim and Chalitza before we get to the tshuva.
Yeah, and I just want to note also, you know, I always find it very fascinating learning about a little bit of the family enterprise behind certain shalos and tshuvos. In particular, because I'm working right now, I'm giving an Igros Moshe shir at my shul. So I went back and actually carefully read Rav Moshe's Hallowed Hakdama, and there's like a little throwaway line in there that I've never, maybe I just haven't done enough research, seen pointed out, in which he's explaining why he wrote it. And then there's a little line where he says, and also I wanted to give nachas to my father, who was confident that one day I'd be a Talmud Chacham and people would ask me shailas. So it's very touching to see this idea of the continuity of the Doros carrying on their parents' legacy. So Beis Yosef, Rav Moshe, and I'm sure many others as well. Unfortunately, as the Gemara talks about, some were not zocha to that for certain reasons, but Ein kamakom laharech.
Yeah, no, you see in the introduction how, you know, he's trying to, his father passed away when he was 3 years old. How much of a connection did he have? And this was his way of connecting and perpetuating his legacy. Not that he needed his legacy to perpetuate. I mean, the Shulchan Aruch was the most successful sefer probably ever published in Chumash and Rashi. But still, it did perpetuate some of his legacy. Now we have his tshuvas. Now
we have these tshuvas. Now we have this episode.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
Without any further ado. So what do we got to know about this particular?
Okay. So let's first give a little background on Yimim and Chalitza. When a man dies childless, as most of the listeners know, the brother of the deceased must either do Yibam, which is basically means he marries the sister-in-law, or he do Chalitza, which is a whole ceremony involving a shoe and spitting. We're not going to get into the specifics now. Now, the man who was referred to as the Yavam, and the woman who needs Yibam is called the Shomeres Yavam. She's awaiting Yibam. So now if the man comes and says, I don't want to do Yibam, he comes to court and says, I want to do Chalitza, that's obviously his right. We don't need a better source than the Torah for that. The Torah says if a man does not want to do Yibam, he does Chalitza, there's nothing a court can do about it, that's his right. Now, if a man, if the man wants to do Yibam, so do we allow him to do Yibam? So now, why not? So there's this opinion of Abba Shaul on the Mishnah. And Abba Shaul is of the opinion that if a man does Yibam, Shalom L'Shemetz, he doesn't have the right intention in mind, then potentially there's an Isser Kares. Now, why is there an Isser Kares? Because a person is not allowed to marry his brother's wife. The exception to that is Yibam. But if it's not done L'Shemetz, according to Abba Shaul, there would not be a mitzvah Yibam, and therefore you'd violate an Isser Kares. So the question becomes, how concerned are we about Abba Shaul? Is Abba Shaul Dasi Yachid? Do we paskin like Abba Shaul? Are we worried about Abba Shaul? So this is a machlokas that starts from the Mishnah, it goes to the Gemara, it goes to the Rishonim. It's never been resolved. It's a machlokas that stands today. The basic summary of the machlokas is the Ashkenazi poskim land on the side of mitzvahs chalitza kodemus l'mitzvahs yibam, which means literally the mitzvah chalitza takes precedence over yibam, which is a way of saying we don't do yibam, we only do chalitza. Now there are situations where perhaps we would allow yibam, but it would have to be because we're choshish for Abba Shaul. It would have to be in a case where we're sure that we're doing it l'shem shamayim. The Sfardi poskim, on the other hand, do not concern us about Abba Shaul. They paskin mitzvahs yibam kodemus l'mitzvahs chalitza, that you can do yibam today. It's not a problem. Okay. So now.
And this is a big problem in general. I mean, you think about in Hilchos Geiros, this comes up a lot, which is we're trying to assess the sincerity of someone's motives. But as I'm sure we're probably familiar with the principle of Dvarim Shebelev Einam Dvarim, many times, you know, we rely on umdanas and we rely on actual straightforward speech. But in many areas of halacha, we just simply can't look inside people's brains. And it's hard to assess sincerity. And so what you're saying here, the Ashkenazic approach is to take a cautious approach to the matter. Why risk an Isser Kares when we could just go down the Chalitza route? Even if fundamentally Yibam is preferable, it's because of the counterbalancing concern of what if we get it wrong. So exactly. Ashkenazic practice is to go straight for Chalitza and not even offer the option of Yibam.
Yeah, there is a tshuva. I forget if it's from the Chacham Tzvi or Rav Yaivet, someone in that family who makes the argument, I think, if I recall, that we that even when someone has to be L'shem Shemayim, nobody's ever completely L'shem Shemayim. So even when the Gemara, even Abba Shaul says it has to be L'shem Shemayim, it doesn't have to be 100% L'shem Shemayim. There's always ulterior motives in everything we do. But that's that. Leaving that aside, just to address the point you made that we don't really know what's in a person's heart. So now, when a Shemeres Yavam comes to court with her Yavam and demands her brother-in-law to act, so if the brother-in-law were to say, no, I don't care about you. So obviously, if you have a based in that has authority, which is, I think, mostly a foreign concept today, but which did exist at some point, the based in would compel him. You have to act, either do Yibum or Chalitza. That's not really a Shaila. But the vast majority of Shailas, pretty much, I wouldn't say every, but hundreds or maybe even thousands of Shailas in the Tshuva Svarim that happen are from the following fact pattern, where the man says, I'll do Yibum, and the woman says, no, I want Chalitza, not Yibum. That's where the shailas begin. And that's where the poskim and the batei din have to figure out how do we deal with this. And of course, whether you're Ashkenazi, whether you're Sephardi, whether the based in is Ashkenazi or Sephardi, it's all going to play a role. So just with that background, now we can get to our story. Okay. So we have a group of four rabbis. Three of them are named Ashkenazi. So three Ashkenazi and one Sephardi. Presumably this takes place in the city of Tzfas, although it doesn't say so explicitly, but I would have to imagine it takes place in Tzfas. The story takes place, they write a letter. Four Rabbanim write a letter to the Beis Yosef. And they say, this is what happened. The story takes place, the way they date it is January 26, 1565. Well, they date the Hebrew date. I converted it to the English date. So the man dies childless. And now his brother and his widow show up in court. So the widow was actually represented by her brother, kind of as like her lawyer. And the widow's brother says, okay, let's do Chalitza. So the Yavam says, no, I'm going to do Yibam. And if you don't want Yibam, that's fine. You could stay in Aguna. You could stay chained to me, Ad Shetal Ben Rosha, until your hair turns gray. I'm giving you one out, Yibam. I am not willing to do Chalitza. Okay. So the letter continues and says that it wasn't just four rabbis, even though the four rabbis write a letter, there was a fifth rabbi with us. And the fifth rabbi's name was Reb David Ibn Zimra. And Reb David Ibn Zimra seems to have been leading the conversation. And he tells the Yavam, he says, Lamek Sheorafata, why are you so stubborn? Why do you insist on doing Yibam? Clearly, Chalitza is the preferable approach here. And he makes four arguments why we should do Chalitza and not Yibam. Number one, you're already married with children. Number two, you're broke poor. You can't even afford your current family. You certainly can't afford a second one. Number three, now you are a Sephardi, and Sephardim do Yibam. However, the woman is an Ashkenazi. And we have to concern ourselves with that because Ashkenazim don't do Yibam. And number four, and perhaps most importantly, is, says Reb David Ibn Zimra, we know the truth here. You have told many people that you have no desire to do Yibam. The only reason that you're acting this way is because you're afraid of your mother. Now, if you think about it, his mother would be the widow's mother-in-law, right? Because they're brothers, right? So his mother is the same as her late
husband. Oh, I didn't mother. Think about the family dynamic right. that way. Right. But so when you said it, that clicks.
You got a Sephardi husband, Ashkenazi wife. Angry mother-in-law. It's there's a lot of family politics here.
Oh boy.
So the only reason you're acting this way is because you're afraid of your mother, and your mother doesn't allow you to do chalitza. This whole thing is a ploy. So Reb David concludes and he says, I make a shua. If you were going to marry her, if you were going to do yibam, you're not performing the mitzvah of yibam. You're violating the iser v'eshes ach. And to strengthen that argument, they have reports how much this yavam really despised his sister-in-law. He had spread terrible rumors about her, some of them that they write, we can't even put into print, wow. Including the fact that she was potentially an islandess, which means that she was incapable of having children, which creates a whole other set of issues because there is no even when it comes to an islandess. And not only do you hate her mother, right? So the mechutin, right? His parents, mechutanim, hates them too. And therefore, Reb David concludes, if you don't listen to us, we're going to put you in chair. That's his argument. So this is
fascinating. So point number three, that she's an Ashkenazis, actually plays into point number four, because the Ashkenazic custom, as you articulated, is the concern it's not being done l'shem Shemayim. And here, he actually said himself with his own mouth, Hodas Valdin Kimei Edim Dami, or I don't know, maybe it's Rishus. I'm not sure if it's self incrimination. Exactly. So maybe that this is actually the real concern. It's not just simply, oh, she just happens to be an Ashkenazi. It's like the actual concern of that Ashkenazic custom is at play. Though the fascinating thing here is, going back to perhaps this is a classic Shuva of Moshe Feinstein on Minhagim, he explains that how does Minhag work in a family? That it's like changing your makom. When the woman comes to the man, she's entering into his makom. So it's interesting because they're making the argument that since at the moment until she gets married, she's still an Ashkenazis, right. Even though, you know, maybe it could happen b'vas acha, she immediately becomes right. Sephardi as she enters and she's not in violation of the Minhag.
Right, and to make this question even stronger, right, her first husband presumably was Sephardi too, with their brothers, right?
Ooh.
So she's Sephardi, she becomes Ashkenazi, then Sephardi again. We're going to touch on some of this as we go through it.
Oh, but right, because yeah. They're brothers, so they're both Sephardi.
Right. Yeah, that's presumably, right? Unless they were born in different, I don't know. No, yeah, they would be Sephardi, yeah.
So I saw there were four counterclaims that yes. The husband gives. Do you want to go through the four of those?
Yes, we'll go through them quickly. So first, his argument, I'm married. He says, you're married already. So he says, so what? We're living in Tzfas. I'm a Sephardi. Married two wives. I wouldn't be the first person to do it. What's the big deal? We don't subscribe to Chaim Rabbeinu Gershon where we come from. So that's first issue. Two, Parnassa. He gives a mussar to the court. He says, you're going to tell Parnassa? Where does Parnassa come from? Parnassa comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where's your betachan? You're worried about provide, right? He's a very firm guy, much firmer than the base. Number three, which is kind of your argument, which is Ashkenazi. Great, marry me. She'll be Sephardi again. What's the big deal? And then as far as all the bad things I said, so he concedes that some of them may be true. But he says, listen, I'll admit I didn't want to do Yibam. But then my mother said, I can't do Chalitza. So I want to listen to my mother. I'm all in on Yibam now. Before, I didn't want to do Yibam. The facts have changed. There was a Chalitza option. There's no longer a Chalitza option. I'm all in on Yibam. I'm L'shem Shemayim. I want to do Yibam.
Right, okay. the impetus of, I don't know if you want to call it kibud aim, or maybe it's more of like a mora, it's more of a yira of his mother.
Yeah. I think there's a yira here.
It's more of a yira, probably. I mean, this is just like a crazy family dynamic where he's still beholden to his mother to the extent that he would change his personal family dynamic. I mean, we don't know what his current wife thinks about the situation. I would imagine she's probably not interested in this.
Yes, I agree. You know, I think it's, you know, there's clearly, I think, our attitude towards chalitza has probably changed. You know, today chalitza is thankfully so rare because of, you know, the higher life expectancies. Today, I think, again, any dayanim listening can correct me, I imagine that people view chalitza as a very exotic mitzvah, right? It doesn't come along, and when it happens, everyone comes to see it, and their video's taken. You know, you see from the tshuvas clearly, but not always the attitude. It was viewed as almost like a velus, and people really didn't want to do chalitza and really tried getting out of it. So this just might be an example of that. Anyway, to continue the story, so the court does not accept his arguments. They say, okay, you have 3 days to respond. During those 3 days, there's a discussion of a payoff. They can't sell on a price. So 3 days pass. They go to the guy and says, you know, time to do chalitza. He snaps at them. He says, bug off. I'm not doing it. I have nothing to do with you. So now the signatories of this letter, these four rabbanim, they draft this scherim. And they reached out to Reb David. And they say, you sign. You know, you were with us. And it's time to sign the scherim. And all of a sudden, he does a 180. This Reb David, he refuses to sign. He says, I was making empty threats. I never meant it. So they published the Cheirim without Reb David's signature. And then comes Friday night.
Right.
And
it says, if I may, it says even like, Adraba, Hichsig Yad Hayabam Bedibur Maisa. It's not just simply he recused himself. Yeah. He was actually shifting to support the Yavam. So.
Yes, at least in the version of these Rabbanim. And it culminates in an incident on Friday night in Shul where they come to the man walks in that Friday night to Shul. And somehow all five Rabbanim were in the same Shul. And the four Rabbanim say, get out. There's a Cherim. And Reb David gets up and says, nope, you can stay.
Oof.
So now when you hear the story, you start to question this Reb David person, you know, what happened? Was there a threat? God forbid, was he paid off? Is this a corrupt rabbi? Now, if you want to cast his opinion aside, you can, but I should just warn you who this Reb David really is. Reb David Ibn Zimra is the Radvaz. And the Radvaz is not someone that you can cast aside. Radvaz, the great, you know, post-sig in his day, the author of 10,000 tshuvas, you know, tshuvas that we still use today when it comes to organ donation, Ethiopian Jews, you know, a real major post-sig and someone who we can't just ignore. So, you know, today is about the Beis Yosef, not about the Radvaz. But I do want to say that we can't just leave the Radvaz. And there is a defense of the Radvaz. But I just don't want people to get the wrong impression for the Radvaz. But it was the Radvaz on the other side of this argument.
So does the Radvaz produce a tshuva of his own on this topic as well?
So the Radvaz, there is a tshuva from the Radvaz. That tshuva from the Radvaz is published in the Maribe Rav. Since for some reason, it was not published in his own term. It was published in the Maribe Rav. Huh. And he has a slightly different version of events. Maybe at the end, we'll say his... It's not that much different. I mean, he focuses on some facts and not on others. He has a little bit of... Some of the facts are different, but it's really the halachic... You know, the short of it is he felt halachically they just couldn't compel chalitza. And therefore, the cheren was invalid. That's all. It wasn't that he was defending the guy, that he liked the guy. It just, he felt that we couldn't compel chalitza. But maybe we'll discuss at the end. Although I think we might be running out of time. So I don't know if we'll get to it at the end. But there is a tshuva, if you want to look it up, it's in the tshuva's Maribe Rav. Okay. So now when you have the Radvaz sabotaging your Bezdin, who do you turn to? You know, you have three Ashkenazi Rabbanim with one Sfardi. You have the Sfardi on the other side. You have the Sfardi Yavam. You're in Tzvas. The obvious address for this question is the Beis Yosef, right? The Sfardi, the undisputed leader of the generation. So they turn to the Beis Yosef and they present their halachic rationale to the Beis Yosef. And to quickly go through each of the arguments, we'll do it quickly. The first argument was that because he was married, and they cite the tshuva of the Rivash. The Rivash says that even those Sfardi poskim who say mitzvah zivim kodemus mitzvah chalitza would agree that where he's married, mitzvah chalitza kodemus, right? And also they add that the Gemara already discusses how it's the job of a court to give good advice to a Yavam and a Yavam. The example the Gemara gives is if you have an elderly Yavam and a young Shomeris Yavam, then the court says, what are you doing? You're going to machnes katata, you're going to bring quarreling, you bring fighting, this, you know, this massive age gap, there's going to be fighting. Don't do it. So it's the court's job to encourage, you know, and discourage improper Yavams. And this is clear. You can't find a greater case of katata than the fact pattern we have here. So therefore, it is, because Yavam is not appropriate, that leaves us, that leaves the only option on the table is chalitza. And because he's not willing to do chalitza, well, then we can compel him to do chalitza. And that compulsion would be through the cherem. As far as the argument that he was broke, they make the argument that the Gemara says that if a man says, I refuse to support my wife, Einizan, I refuse to support my wife, the court can compel a divorce. And by compel, the Rishonim say, whatever power you have, you can beat him up, whatever it takes, you have the right to compel a get. So we see that if you can force a divorce for a man unwilling to support his wife, we certainly can prevent a yibam from taking place because he refuses to support his wife. Now, of course, the argument here is he's not actually refusing to support his wife. But the court is saying, in essence, you are, because you can't. And you physically can't support your wife, and therefore, it's the same thing. And this is one area where the Radvaz would take issue. And he does take issue and says there's a difference between saying, I won't support, and I just... I'm not, you know, right. I didn't make
there's
a living.
Between like the etzem in principle versus the metzias.
Right.
In principle, he can. He just simply doesn't have the money at the time. But if he wins the lottery, he can.
Yeah. And as the Radvaz points out, we don't compel poor men to divorce their wives every week, right? We only compel people who say, I refuse to support my wife. People who struggle to make a living and don't put bread on the table. We don't compel them to divorce, which, you know, I think is a fairly good argument.
Right. Just sell up a lot of stocks of True Social, and then you'll be wealthy.
There
right?
There you go. Maybe short sell it. Okay, and the third point was the Ashkenazi point. So, you know, the Rabbanim point out, they give the whole list of Rishonim, Rashi, or, you know, Hananel, Tosfos, the Smag, the Rush, they all hold that we don't do Yibam anymore. And according to those poskim, Yibam is only allowed in the Shasat Chak, where you know that it was L'Shem Shemai. And clearly, that's not what's happening here. We know the facts here. We're not doing L'Shem Shemai. So therefore, you have to be able to compel Chalitza. And they conclude with, I thought of the fascinating tshuva from Rav Avadya Bar Tanura, which is far-reaching consequences if you accept the halacha. And Rav Avadya says, we know the halacha is that if a person moves from city A to city B, and this touches on what you addressed before, that if you move and you don't plan on going back to A, you adopt the customs of B. You can drop the customs of A. If you're a visitor, you got to do the chumras of both. If you're moving, you adopt it. Says Rav Avadya Bar Tanura, that's only true by minhag. But if you have a practice, if your community has a practice, which is not a minhag, it's something that your community holds as an isser, then even when you move to the new community, you still have to keep the old community's practice. So take that to our case. Right here, it's not a minhag not to do yibam. It's an isser according to the Ashkenazi poskim. So because this woman grew up in an Ashkenazi community, so to speak, meaning she was an Ashkenazi, so even though now she's moving to a Sephardic community by marrying a Sephardi, she still must maintain the original practices because it's not a minhag. We're not talking about kitnias, right? Where, okay, I had a minhag not to eat kitnias, I married Ashkenazi, I can marry a Sephardi, now I can eat kitnias. We're talking about an isser, and by an isser, moving communities or marrying into a new community doesn't change anything. And this obviously has far-reaching consequences. You can wonder about so many different shilas. Again, if you accept this, right. You're the rabbi.
Well, I think there's two things fascinating to about this. One is, I mean, at least for myself, I didn't realize that Ravadi Bartanura actually had Chiles and Chuvos. Of course, I'm familiar with his pay Rosham and Shnayos. So, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, he's such a light. I mean, Chas Hashem. But, you know, people could have that thought, Chas Hashem. That's such a lightweight writing a pay Rosham and Shnayos. I mean, first of all, you have to be a huge Shalom Chacham to be the one to write the pay Rosham and Shnayos. But the fact that he was doing Chiles and Chuvos as well. And the second point is, yeah, there's kind of like, broadly speaking, I think at least two categories of Minhagim. There's Minhagim, which we take on something almost completely new. And then there's Minhagim, which is we're adopting, we have a minhag to adopt a particular psak in a certain machlokas. So that category, he's saying, remains regardless. It's not a matter of practice. That's just, right. That is the new halachic reality. So anyway, yeah. All of this is a very long tshuva ruling that these Rabbanim wrote together. And then following it is the actual tshuva of Maran HaBeis Yosef, which it says there. And thankfully, it's a little bit shorter.
Yeah, so the Beis Yosef, he basically agrees with them. And he says, he opens his tshuva, I read everything the Ashkenazim had to say. And here's what I think. He says, we definitely pass like the Rambam here in Tzfas, at least in our community. He calls him the Murad Asra, right? Mitzvah Yiv, of course we do leave him. However, because he's married, Chalitza is Kudamas, he quotes a Rivash. Now there's some ambiguity on the Rivash, and that's where the Radvaz uses the Rivash to his, you know, to bolster his cause. But the Beis Yosef says, do not misunderstand the Rivash. I mean, the Rivash is really addressing, let's talk about the next point, the Parnasa. So he says that the Gemara Ksuba says that a woman has a right to demand a divorce if the husband has bad breath, Reach HaPeh. So if you have the right to demand divorce for Reach HaPeh, so then, you know, it's not crazy to say that if you can't support, you also have the right to demand divorce. And if you have a right to demand divorce, then again, we certainly have the right to prevent Yibam from happening. And as I mentioned, there was this ambiguous Rivash, which the Radvaz argued support his case. And the Beis Yosef says, you're misunderstanding the Rivash. The reason the Rivash is ambiguous is he never thought that there would ever be a situation where a person would not be able to support his current wife and then he would willingly take on a second wife. He didn't feel the need to address it because it was so obvious to him.
Yeah, what kind of crazy case is this?
Exactly. That was the Beis Yosef's argument. Finally, he therefore he concludes the we can compel chalitza, it's proper. And then he finishes with what I think is a fascinating svara. You may not accept it, but he says, let's take a step back here and say, who is it that the Radvaz is using? Like, who is at the top of the pack when we talk about mitzvahs and even kodems? The Rambam. The Rambam is the greatest of the Sephardi postkin. He's the one. So he says, you're going to use the Rambam of all people. You're going to use the Rambam to force Yibam? The Rambam is the one that famously holds that a married woman has a right to show up in court and say, ma'as alai. I despise him. I can't handle being married. I didn't do anything wrong. It's just Moshe lie. That's it. I'm despised by him. I'm repulsed. That's the word I'm looking for. I'm repulsed by him. That's enough. So the same Rambam who says that a woman could just say Moshe lie and just get out of a marriage like that, you're going to use him to say that we force Yibam? Now it's a very geschmack of svara, but like, the counter argument,
like,
of course,
it's like an oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom hatechacha. You're going to use the Rambam as your proof?
But the problem is, right, look at the Shulchan Aruch, right? The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam that mitzvah is even kodemus, and does not paskin like the Rambam by Mo'ez Halai. So it's not crazy to say that we accept one psak of the Rambam. But, you know, this is just a snip. This is not like the Beis Yosef's whole tshuva is this line. He's just bringing home the hashkafa that, are you really going to use the Rambam of all people to kill this poor woman? Is that what you're going to do? And therefore, he concludes that they absolutely have the right to compel chalitza. The cheirim was proper, but he says, if you don't want to do a cheirim, there's a back door cheirim, which is, instead of putting the guy in cheirim, the community could get together and say, we accept on ourselves not to deal with him until he does, you know, he performs the chalitza for his shomeres yavam. So that would be a backdoor way of doing it if you're afraid of using the court system to do a cheirim. But the halacha, he holds that the cheirim was proper. I guess to spend 1 minute just defending the Radvaz, because we have to defend the Radvaz's honor. So as we mentioned, the Radvaz has his own tshuva. We'll just summarize, because this is not a show on the tshuva's Radvaz, maybe one day. And the Radvaz basically says, as you mentioned, like, you know, he's not necessarily taking this guy's side. He says, there's one problem. We don't have the power to compel chalitza. That's it. Mitzvah zivim kodemus l'mitzvah chalitza. That's how we, the Sephardi poskim paskim. We don't have the power to compel chalitza. And many of the proofs that you try to bring, it's really, you're missing the point. It's really all about chayr Rabbeinu Gershon. And he kind of accuses these Ashkenazi rabbanim of having a little chip on their shoulder about Chayr Rabbeinu Gershon. This is all a ploy to bring Chayr Rabbeinu Gershon in a place where it does not belong. And therefore, we can't kabbalah. And he also disputes some of the facts. He says that the guy claimed he did have a way of making a living. And he has a little bit of a difference in how the story went down. Like, it seems like the Radvaz starts his tshuva with like the second half of the story. Like, he didn't, the tshuva of the Beis Din was the beginning, when the Radvaz was leading the conversation. And the second, the Radvaz's tshuva starts with like the second half where they published the Chayim, doesn't really address that he was the one leading the Beis Din in the first part of the conversation.
Ah.
And there's some other minor discrepancies in the story. He also says that there was a long, it was unclear to me if there was some kind of disagreement between the Yavam and this court. Now, I don't know if it was all four Dayanim on the court or the one Sfari Rav on the court. It's a little unclear to me. He says, there's an old hate going back, but there was some internal politics. But that's just to defend the Radvaz's honor. Of course, he had halachic rationale. He was not paid off. He was not threatened. He just helped. Now, what happened? What happened in the end? I don't know. We don't have a historic record. I hope that the Radvaz, you know, it would be nice to find out that the Radvaz was machnia himself to the Beis Yosef and said, okay, the Chayrim worked and he did Chalitza, but I don't know if anyone has a record, you know.
Please, yeah, if to our listeners, if you know the conclusion to this, please do comment in the on Spotify or wherever that you are listening. And I also kind of get a kick out of like the indignant Sephardic feelings toward Ashkenazim. Like, yeah, here come these Ashkenazim with their Reform Judaism and they're making up their new harems and stuff. Yeah. We're keeping the original tradition. Don't try imposing your innovations on us. Obviously, I'm being anachronistic, but it seems to be a something in the back of the Sephardic consciousness going many years back. And certainly today, though, I don't want to speak. We have a lot of lovely Sephardic people listening, and you know, feel free to comment if you feel that approach to us Ashkenazim. We still love you anyway, right? Of Rav Avadia Yosef writes, "Achenu ha-Ashkenazim." We're all brothers in the end of the day. I was wondering, so Gedalia, just in our last few minutes, was there anything? Again, you packed a lot of content in there, so you know, shkoyach, grace of shkoyach to you. I'm very curious also. So I know you teach this weekly Shas Tshuvas al Hadaf. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about it? Maybe they'd be interested in listening. How do you go about choosing your tshuvos? How do you match it? You know, tell us, how do you get that into your packed schedule as a lawyer as well?
Okay, so I started it in Maseches Pesachim, and I think I've given like 102. Now, if you do the math, you clearly see that it does not add up, the weekly part. So, you know, as life, you know, gets busier, kids get older, sometimes it's not always weekly. I usually give it on Tuesday night. I will not be giving tonight. So it's not always weekly. So with that caveat, if anyone wants to look up the shiurim, you could look at, either you can look me up on Twitter, or now it's called X, you know, at Gedalia Uyelgis, or my shul's website, kahallevavos.org. It's nice when you kind of control the website, so you can just add your shiurim and nobody can
We'll put a link in the show notes.
Oh, thank you. And you can look up, you know, shiurim. You should be able to find it there. So I, you know, I try to find, it's actually interesting. The way I got into, I always loved childhood tshuvas. But the reason I started doing this was actually because of the Radvaz. I was in a bungalow colony, you know, one of these old fashioned bungalow colonies at the Catskills, where they have a sitter, a chumash, and some random sefer. And the random sefer was a tshuvas Radvaz. And, you know, I was just going through the Radvaz. It was a long Kabbalah Shabbos, I guess. And you know, and I remember I was sitting next to my brother, and I kept tapping him, like, you got to see this. And I realized, like, there's so much. And I, you know, not like the first time I've seen a Radvaz, but there's so much in all the Tshuva Sorim that, like, people are, you know, they don't realize the wealth. Again, there's a lot of stuff to learn. I'm not saying anyone has to learn Shalos and Tshuvas. There's a lot of stuff to learn out there, but there's so many fascinating topics. And you really, you know, like, you know, as you're doing, as the same reason you have your podcast, there's so much out there that people are unaware of, myself included. So I decided I have to, you know, give a share, and I tied it to the daf, you know, just to have like some kind of anchor. Otherwise, you know, I guess you figure out a way to do it without tying it to any specific. But I, you know, I figured out, and I'll be honest, I don't even learn the daf. So, but you know, but
the way
there you go. So, you know, I have I have different ways of finding tshuva. So, you know, if I see an interesting tshuva, I'll go through it and I'll find out, you know, look at the Maror Makomos that are quoted. And I have like a little spreadsheet where I keep track of like an interesting tshuva and what Gemara is he quotes. So when it's time for, you know, like, for example, this week, what I would have given on, like, I have a tshuva from Rav Aaron Cutler about teachers going on strike, which is, I think, a fascinating topic. And it quotes this past week's Gemara and Bava Metzia. So that's one way to do it. But I haven't yet built up a large enough spreadsheet to have something for every week. So there's a sefer called a State Sofim. I think it's a Stay at Sof or something like that, which is an excellent source, which, you know, he has a ton of Maror Makomos on every daf and shas. So I use that a lot to try to find some interesting tshuvas.
Right. I look at the Aliva, the Hilchasa section in the back of the Masiftas usually gives away a few as well.
There you go. There's another option. And sometimes a mafteach, you know, some svarim have better maftechos than others.
True.
You know, so that's how I find the tshuvas.
Well, thank you for sharing some tricks of the trade. You should continue to be matzliach in this project. And again, I just want to say I'm personally very impressed because here I am, you know, I work full time in the rabbinate. So naturally, a lot of what I do with the podcast synthesizes and synchronizes with, you know, material I'm teaching at the shul many times. I could many times between Mincha Maariv, maybe I'll do this today. I get up there and I say, well, I was interviewing Mr. Gedalia Wielgus today about this fascinating tshuva of the Beis Yosef. Let me share with you just a few highlights between Mincha Maariv as we're filibustering until Shkia. So, you know, I think it's just remarkable that here you are with a full-time job and you are finding time to learn Torah and be Marbitz Torah. So Hashem should bless you to be continue to be Matzliach in doing so. And looking forward to listening to some Shas and Tshuvas al Adaf.
Thank you so much. It was a real schluss and a real blast. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Take care. Thank you for listening to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Please make sure to subscribe to get the latest updates. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us and leave a review. Do you have a response to the response that you want to share on the show? Please send your letter to the editor to MitchellMKurtz@gmail.com. And God willing, we would love to consider your perspective to be shared on a future episode. This is Moshe Kurtz, and I look forward to reviewing more responses with you next time on Shoot First, Ask Questions Later.